Hi, this is Rick Emmett of Triumph, and you're listening to Iron City Rocks.
Hey, this is Southside Johnny from the Asbury Jukes, and you're listening to Iron City Rocks. Yes, you are.
Hi, this is Reese Wine, and you're listening to Iron City Rocks from Pittsburgh.
All right, Pittsburgh! You wanted the best! You got the best!
Hello and welcome to episode 574 of the Iron City Rocks podcast. I'm your host John, coming to you from the Iron City of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, bringing you the best rock, hard rock, heavy metal, and blues talk on the net. Episode 574, we're introducing you to two musicians who we want to put on your radar. The first is a band called The Devil's Cut. They're out of Louisville, Kentucky. So we're going to talk to them in just a little bit. And we're also going to be joined by blues jazz rock guitarist Stu Cutler, who's going to be doing a show in Pittsburgh here in the month of May. So we will catch up with Stu in just a little while. But first, we're going to introduce you to band The Devil's Cut. They were just in Erie over the first weekend of May. Apologize, we were not able to get this episode out to you before they were doing that show in Erie, in case anybody wanted to make the drive. But highly recommend you check out these guys' website. We'll have links in our show notes on how to get to their social media. They've got some shows being out of Louisville. Certainly not far away. There are shows in Ohio, shows in West Virginia, and I don't think it'll be long before we have a proper show here in the Western Pennsylvania area as well. So we're going to play you a little bit of what I think is a great kind of anthem for this band. It kind of talks about what they're about. The song's called Drink with the Devil. You get the country influences, the rock, the metal, the Pantera, the Charlie Daniels. It's got everything in it that I think really, really talks about what this band is about. Then we're going to get an interview with the vocalist Trey Landry. Ladies and gentlemen, my pleasure to welcome from the band Devil's Cut. We have Trey Landrum on the line. How you doing, Trey?
Hey, doing well. Thanks for having me, man.
It is my pleasure. Had a chance to listen to your debut album, which drops in just a few days from this. And I guess the first question when I listened to it, and I actually Googled your band to see what Google said, is what style you guys fall under? It's calling you metalcore, country, pop. I swear I hear a tiny bit of hip hop thrown in there. You know, it's kind of all over the map. But as you listen to Roadkill, if someone were to say to you, you know, you need to drop this in a particular section in a record store, where are you putting that record?
Me personally, we use the coin. We like the coin term mossy oak metal. Just okay. It just sounds funny. But to be just basic, like, okay, this is where we go, hard rock.
Okay.
I'd just say hard rock. Yeah, hard rock. Because, I mean, it is a hard rock record. We're a hard rock band. We just have elements of country influence.
Okay. Yeah, I listened to Drink with the Devil, and I was like, okay, you've got kind of Charlie Daniels and Pantera and just you know, some other things thrown in there. I'm like, it's a really cool track because I think it does a really nice job of kind of introducing not only the record but the band, because you're kind of, it's a bit of a manifesto. I think of, you know, back to like Kiss, when, you know, they came up with the idea for Rock and Roll Night Party Every Day. What is this band about? You know,
yeah.
And I think that does it well. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, where the band's from, what you guys have been kind of doing? I know you have some older singles, but am I correct? This is your official debut record as far as a full length.
Yeah, no, it is. We've always done the single game. Being a DIY band, it's not cheap. So, like, we've always been working multiple jobs to kind of feed the machine, feed the dream. And the only thing that really made sense for the budget was to do like one song a time, you know, because we would also do music videos and visuals for everything we did, and those aren't cheap either. So a collective, we're shelling out way more money than we had, but we were doing it anyway. So with this being said, just to have the backing we do now, which is a blessing, and I love Monarch. They've saw the vision and really are trying to execute with us the idea. But to be able to go to Nashville for an entire month, sit there with a producer and cut 10 new songs all at once, something we've not done. So it's a cool feeling. It was a lot of work, but I'm proud of it. We all are. It's just this whole process is just so Japanese to us, you know?
Yeah. No, and it's interesting, you know, as a band that's making new music, to talk about having the backing of a label. So if you don't mind, I'd like to touch, how did you end up on Monarch's radar? You know, because there's, you know, a lot of music is now either legacy acts that have been with massive labels for a very long time, you know, continuing to put up projects, or bands that are really kind of doing it themselves. You don't see a lot of new bands getting the backing of,
no,
you know, a label. Is this more of a distribution deal, or how are they involved?
No, it's they it's full blown. We were on tour. This is the summer before last, so about two, coming up in almost 2 years. And we had just done two pretty lengthy tours back to back, and we had just ended the final date from the final tour. And we're driving back from, it was Tampa, Florida. We're driving back, and we had already entered the state of Kentucky. We're from Louisville. So only maybe a 45-minute trek till we were home and done. And I woke up to like four missed calls from our manager. And I was like, okay. And
something's
me,
up.
He's like my best friend. So I thought he was just calling the fuck with me, you know, call me names and just haze me.
Yeah.
Like, I call him back. I was like, what do you need, asshole? He's like, man, we just got hit up by Monarch, a guy named Scott Givens. He really wants to talk to you. And I was like, I'd never heard of Monarch.
Sure.
So I went down the Google realms just to kind of, you know, do my research and looked up Scott's profile, and I was like, holy shit, this guy's legit. Like, the amount of stuff he's done, bands he signed, like Typo Negative, High on Fire. He used to work for Sharon and Ozzy Osbourne. And I'm like, you know, he wants to talk to me? Holy shit, okay. So that kind of springboarded everything from that point on. And it took about a year, because I've never been through this process, especially when it was like finalizing. You know, contracts going back and forth. You want to make sure everyone's comfortable, cross T's, dot I's, don't sign blindly or anything like that. It was about a year process to finalize. And the whole time was just, it felt like 10 years. But it was about a year to finalize. But we had, up until that point, we'd been hit up by three different labels that we, you know, we didn't go with them, but we were timid. It just, things didn't feel right. So we were just like, oh, we're fine doing it on our own for now. And like all that stuff. But just talking to Monarch, Scott, the team, it just felt like the right move.
Yeah. I mean, it is interesting to hear that, because you don't, like, for those not familiar with Monarch, I mean, you're looking at bands from, you know, little big town, through you Wu-Tang to Slash's Snake Pit, Cradle of Filth. I mean, which I kind of love the diversity, because, you know, it's one of the things that I remarked on your record is just the diversity I hear even amongst what you do yourselves. So it's kind of a cool fit, and it's but it's not necessarily, like you said, a name that jumps off the page until you start doing a little bit of homework.
Once you start researching, you're like, holy shit, they rep like every one of these bands, like the big names. I'm like, yeah, that's an honor. Like Under Oath, like Pop Evil. It's really crazy.
Did you guys, like, submit some to them or someone stumble into a show?
Scott found us on YouTube. Our After Midnight video. He loved it and really loved it to the point where, because the video is a bar fight, but we hired a bunch of local wrestlers, and it's just a bunch of wrestling references, RKOs going down, and it's just obnoxious. And he's a huge wrestling fan. He's like, "This is genius! I see what you're doing. I get the country metal tie used in wrestling to you know do that because so many country people love wrestling." And he's like, "This is genius! Like, I'm all about this." And that's really what segued, like, just him going down his rabbit hole on YouTube and just stumbling upon us. Like, it's weird, but I mean, shit happens.
It does. And it's interesting. You mentioned like the wrestling and the country connection, because it's, you know, some of those things are so big, but it's interesting how the music industry has kind of put country music off in its own little bucket, but it really doesn't belong there in a lot of ways. When you listen to, you know, contemporary country, you hear, you know, Morgan Wallen, where I'm like, you know, there's like some dance beats going on in there, and you know, the guitar and the guitar solos, and there really is kind of a blurry line there at best.
Yeah.
And you know, you look at country artists selling stadiums, you know.
I mean, so, it's huge genre right now, probably the biggest right now. I think country music this past year, I'm pretty sure I read on Billboard, it was the biggest year country music has ever had.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in our fair city of Pittsburgh, you've got Morgan Wallen playing back to back nights in a stadium. You know, Jelly Roll rolls up into town. It sells out every, you know, I was amazed. I was maybe 2 years ago, I considered getting tickets to see Brooks and Dunn, and it was like, holy cow, they're way sold out and incredibly expensive on the secondary market. So there's certainly a niche there, but you know, I think the fusion of rock makes a lot of sense, you know, and it isn't, you know, country and pop have gone together. I'm sure even before Shania Twain, but in my lifetime, Shania Twain kind of solidified that, that would work. But the kind of country and metal, you know, there's certainly, you know, going back to bands like Molly Hatchet and stuff, there's always been that kind of blurry line there between.
You nailed it on the head. It's always been kind of in front of us this whole time. Mm-hmm. You know, you see bands now, like on the other end of the spectrum, we're metal dabbling in country. There's country artists dabbling in metal, like Hardy, Lakeview, Cut Wetzel. Like there's just, Treaty Oak Revival. There's just this weird skew of things now between both sides where everyone's just doing the opposite but tying in together. It's really odd to see, but it's awesome in the same sense. But like bands like Nickelback, I think about Nickelback, and they are country. Like you go back, listen to their like earlier stuff, Rockstar is a fucking country song. Like it really is. Like close your eyes and envision a guy in a cowboy hat saying it. You'd be like, yeah, I believe it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been there.
So the album that you're releasing on, I guess it would be Friday at this point, the Roadkill album. Is this a kind of a culmination of years worth of songs, or were these songs that, you know, were you guys kind of dropping signals as you had them? And this was a, hey, I got to sit down and bang out, you know, 10 new songs for Monarch.
It was a little bit of both. We through the years have always done like trips to Nashville and just went on a writing bender and accumulated a Dropbox of a lot of demos. And obviously we're not releasing them. They're just demos, but just something to have as ammunition to when we would go and record. Okay, let's look in our Dropbox. Which one we want to do? Which one are we cutting? And just letting the producer kind of decide, you know, out of our thing of songs in our Dropbox. And we had a good accumulation going down. We had about 20 in our demo box, some that we had for 3 years and honestly had forgotten about, but we ended up cutting five of those and we did five brand new. So it was kind of like a 50-50 split.
Okay. So you were, and was it hard to get that kind of cohesion, or like when you're putting new material together, when you're blending with old, was that even a concern?
No, I mean, it's not really. I mean, we're pretty good about just doing it, not really overthinking it, but we also do co-writes, so we'll write with other good writers. So if we ever have a moment in the studio where we're kind of like brick wall, like not thinking, it's you have someone else there to kind of help you get out of that, you know?
Yeah. Was that
So
something
it's
you had
a
done
go ahead.
before writing with others, like outside
Oh
of the band?
yeah. I hated the idea. Our manager really wanted us to start doing that, and I hated the idea initially because it's kind of like a ego hit, you know, where
Sure.
it's like, man, I know how to write a fucking song. I don't need
Yeah.
someone's help.
I've
What do you
listened to songs
need?
my whole life. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like kind of one of those things, but we started our first probably six songs we ever released, we co-wrote with Cody Quistet from Wage War. And working with him, like after the first session, going in not wanting to do it, after I left, I wanted to do it again. It was a great experience. Anyone that is down about doing co-writes should try one, because when you go and do it, you think the way you think. But then when you start working with these other people, like the train of thought, their approach to writing songs, it's almost like going to like class.
Yeah.
So you end up leaving with a knowledge that you might not have had going into it. So this entire time, these past 4 years working with all the people we have, even when we go and write by ourselves, I apply everything I've learned from everybody, and I'm writing better songs now than I ever have. So it definitely helps.
Yeah, I find that refreshing because, some people, will look at that and say, oh, I can't write their own songs, but you're right. You learn from professionals. We've had
Oh,
some of
yeah.
the, Russ Ballard, for example, had been on the show, and I, even sitting down with him for 25 minutes and just talking about writing songs, I felt like I walked away learning so much, and I think, it's a craft, but you learn some of the best craftsmen learn from an apprenticeship. So,
Oh yeah,
it
100%. And
makes a
it's
lot
like
of sense.
even going in, like looking back at the old me, thinking, "Oh, I know how to write a fucking song," and looking back now, I'm like, kind of, not really.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes all the sense of the world, man. Well, you guys are going to be doing a couple shows for folks in Pittsburgh region, that be a little bit of a drive, but certainly worth it. You're doing a show in West Virginia, Dunbar, West Virginia, on the 30th of April, and then you're doing a show in Erie on the 1st of May, probably a little closer for the majority of the audience. Can you touch on that Erie show? What's going on that night?
It's going to be us. We're touring with Allborn. They're same style. They just do it a little different. They're country metal as well,
Sure.
and they're sick. They've got steam too. But we're at Centennial Hall, I want to say.
Exactly.
Pretty
Yeah.
sure. Yeah, it is Centennial Hall. But I think there's three locals, us and then Allborn.
Okay.
It's our first time up there. We have not played Pennsylvania yet. And we've toured a lot. This is our first time in. So hopefully there's people up there that have heard of us. If not, maybe you do now. Just give us a check out. We like to have a good time. We hang out at the merch table, have a beer, have a shot. We'll hang.
Yeah, that sounds perfect. Well, thank you so much, Trey, man. I really appreciate it. And we look forward to seeing you guys when you get into Pittsburgh proper to do a show. That's going to be awesome. And until
Hell
then,
yeah, I can't wait for that.
wish you guys much success with the release of Roadkill this week.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
All right, a big thank you to Trey Landrum of Devil's Cut. The new album, Roadkill, is available now. Hopefully, as I said, we'll get these guys in to do a proper show here in the city of Pittsburgh. We'll have links to all their info if you want to get the album, give it a listen. Highly recommend it. It's reminded me, when I first listened to it, of kind of that first cool vibe I got when I listened to the debut album of the Texas Hippie Coalition. So if you're familiar with those guys, not the same band by any stretch, but a lot of that same kind of southern grit slash hard rock. It's kind of fitting the passing of David Allan Coe and his work with Pantera kind of got me in that same sort of vibe. So check these guys out. I think they're going to be making some waves, and they've got a great team behind them. So really expect some great stuff from them. As I mentioned at the top of the program, we're going to turn our attention now to a guitarist who kind of hard to put him into a category. I would say there's plenty of blues in it, in which is what caught my attention. Some jazz, play some gospel, has worked with the likes of Percy Sledge, Wilson Pickett, who was just an amazing musician, and many, many others. So when I saw that he's coming in to do a show at, as he said, Pittsburgh's Blue Note, if you're familiar with the Blue Note, kind of world famous jazz club, referring to Con Alma here in Pittsburgh, which we have not talked about nearly enough on Iron City Rock. So it was great to get a chance to interview one of the artists coming in to play that fine establishment. Really cool place, really cool food, really cool music. So without further ado, we're going to talk to Mr. Stu Cutler, who will be performing at Con Alma on May 14th. Ladies and gentlemen, my pleasure to welcome to Iron City Rocks. We have on the line Mr. Stu Cutler. How are you doing today, Stu?
Hi there, John. Thanks for having me on.
Absolute pleasure. Had the privilege of listening to your new record just this morning. I was going through it. And
oh, nice.
Really excited to have you come in. The new record, Undercover, for those who haven't heard it yet, we'll play a little bit of that to get everybody excited for it. Great way to follow up the Blues from Another Angle record in 2022.
Thank you.
You're going to be rolling in here in very short order, second week of May, to do a show at Con Alma here
yes.
in Pittsburgh, which is a yes. cool chance to see you in a very intimate venue. Can you talk a little on the Undercover record, kind of what we're experiencing, how that's, I know there's several cover songs, there's a few originals in there, but kind of how the record came together.
Well, you know, I had an old friend, a producer of a big tour that I used to do, actually a big gospel tour that I was mm-hmm. the guitar player for many years, the Harlem Gospel Singers. Almost all the work was in Europe, so it's not as big a name here in the States, but over in Europe, it's a big tour. Mm-hmm. And she had come to see me play, and it was... how come no covers? You know, I mean, your music's good and all mm-hmm. this, but you should throw a couple of covers in. And I guess it hit home, and I just went kind of crazy with it. And this record is mostly cover tunes. Most of my other records, I wrote almost everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hence the title Undercover, mostly.
Mostly,
yeah. We all look like secret agents on the record cover.
Yeah.
That's the basic story behind doing this record. And as we started playing these tunes live and these little arrangements that I came up with, I realized that, you know, we had to make some sort of recording of this to document it. And we did, and it didn't come out all that long ago, but I've gotten a fair amount of attention for this record, which I'm very grateful. A lot of publications, Downbeat, Jazz Times, Jazz Weekly, mm-hmm. some other people, Vintage Guitar, there's some sort of spread coming up there very soon. So I'm grateful, and things are going pretty well with it. And it's a big undertaking to do a record now because the streaming for people like me, you know, a lot of the labels that I used to deal with, they're kind of defunct now because they really can't make their money back
right.
From the streaming. So you're on your own when you're doing it. So it's a lot.
Was it something, did you go into like a proper studio, or are you able to do a lot of this, you know, kind of laptop and direct input sort of stuff?
Yeah.
How do you approach recording?
I did go into a studio. A friend of mine, great bass player named Jerry Brooks, has a studio out in Jamaica, Queens. So we went out there. Jerry didn't play on this. Chulo Gatewood played bass on this. But, you know, we went out two or three times and was able to get everything pretty much together in just a couple of visits out to his studio in Queens. Mm-hmm. And that's a good question. You know, my daughter, she has a couple of records out, and for her, more or less, everything's done on a laptop and
yeah,
all of that. A lot of people do recordings like that now and are able to avoid the expense of going to a proper recording studio.
Yeah.
But I wanted us to play live, and that's kind of the only way to do that, I think, rather than piece it together and layer it like you would do at home.
Yeah, it's totally different experience, and I think it's you know, some instrumentalists are very uncomfortable with, you know, trying to do the laptop and find a quiet place in your home. It doesn't feel authentic.
Yeah.
You know, some people still want to go to tape and, you know, need a big room, and you know, it's
yeah, tape, although it is a little warmer sounding now, I will say that. It's got a little noise to it also. But
yeah.
Yeah.
When you're going through it and you're doing covers, and I love the in the album that you've got such a kind of eclectic mix of songs. Were these things that you had, you know, I guess first question would be, what was the criteria? You know, were these things people suggested to you? Were these songs that you know, I've always loved, you know, you're going from like a Michael Jackson song to a Neil Young song to a Carpenter song. You know, it's kind of in a bunch of different directions. Were there something about these songs that just spoke to you, or how did you land?
It's a really good question. I don't have a great answer for that. And I've been asked a few times mm-hmm. about it. I think songs that spoke to me in some way that were outside of the genre or mm-hmm. genres that I usually play in. You know, I when we do the Carpenter's tune live, I often introduce it as you know, Freddie King meets Karen Carpenter, which of course. I mean, maybe they knew each other existed, but I'm sure they didn't have anything to do with each other musically. But, you know, it's that and the Wayne Shorter tune we do, you know, that melody he plays, it's kind of like a guitar lick.
Yeah.
I don't know if he was thinking that, but I sort of turned that into almost like a Texas blues all the way through. I don't know. I probably have a little bit of a story for each one of these songs. That mm-hmm. you're asking good questions, and I don't want to talk too long.
No, that's okay. I think the one that really jumped out at me as I was going through was Summer Breeze, which is, I'll be quite honest with you, not a song that I would consider myself a fan of. But I'm going through and I'm listening to your rendition. I'm like, there's a beautiful melody there that I think, you know, maybe it's just the production or the age in which I grew up, or especially when I was young, how much that song was on the radio, you know, in kind of our house. It was like, okay, I don't need that song in my life anymore. And then you introduced it to me in a very different, similar
That's
way.
That's good.
You know, that was...
That one has a little different story to it in that years ago, I played with a bass player. It was very, very good friends. And played with him for a long time, a bass player named Harvey Brooks, who did a lot of stuff. This guy played with, you know, Bob Dylan, Miles Davis, The Doors, mm-hmm. and everything in between. But I think the thing he was most proud of was his playing with Seals and Crofts. He often spoke about that as that was something that he was very, very proud of. And so I know that I gave that music kind of an extra listen over my life since I had a little bit of a personal
connection
to it. And why I picked Summer Breeze, I wish I had a really good answer. They've got all sorts of music, but for some reason that one hit home, and we, you know, I came up with a little arrangement for it. Also, I like to, one thing about that arrangement that I do like, for instrumental music, I always like to have, not always, but I always feel it's the next sort of step above to have the different soloists in slightly different settings. So the bass solo is over certain chord changes. Then there's the keyboard solo. Then it moves up for where the guitar solo is. So each soloist has got their own ever so slightly different setting. And I find the better tunes that I've written and instrumental music that I tend to like a lot seems to have that. So that was a long-winded answer. I'm sorry.
Does the fact that, and maybe this is just my ears, but the fact that that song has such a kind of recognizable, I don't want to call it a riff necessarily, but it has a very distinct melody.
Oh, it's a beautiful song.
Does that make approaching an instrumental a little bit easier when you have something other than just a vocal, you know, that has a very distinct musical line in it that can kind of ground you so you can kind of weave in and out of a recognizable melody so easily?
Yeah, well, you know, when the melody is nicer or more, there's more to it, if you're going to take a vocal tune and do it instrumentally, if there's more to the melody, it definitely gives you more to work with. That's for sure. And I always have the lyrics in my head.
Yeah.
When I'm playing, if I'm doing an instrumental tune, doing a tune instrumentally that initially was a vocal tune, as I'm playing, I'm hearing what the lyrics are.
Yeah. I mean, imagine it would be hard not to with that. You know, it's one of those songs. Yeah. I'm sure, you know, being the connection you had to the band, and I didn't even like the song, and it was burned in my head. I'm sure it's really cemented in your head you know, it does that. But let me ask you, kind of flipping the script, when you approach an instrumental song that you wrote, do you kind of put that same sort of vocal melody almost as if there were lyrics when you're composing your leads for a song? Or
that's a really, really good question. I guess it must strike me a little different internally that I'm coming up with that melody rather than covering somebody else's melody and hearing the lyrics there. Good question. I wish I had a slicker answer for you, but I don't.
No, I think about, and that's quite all right. I think about certain instrumental, you know, I've listened to a lot of instrumental guitarists, especially over the years. And certain ones, I think, phrase things almost as if there were choruses and verses and themes that repeat. And some, you know, it's just, I'm going to improvise for 4 minutes over this chord change.
I'll tell you this, though. In terms of playing standards, jazz standards and stuff like that, which I've done a lot of that in my life, I've gotten to the point where, not necessarily with bop tunes, because there were no lyrics to most of those, but, you know, I don't know, I'm just trying to think of anything, you know, All the Things You Are, that's got lyrics. You know, most of those tunes started with lyrics, and I almost prefer playing them with a singer at this point, because then you really get the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I've heard it stated that people that really were great straight ahead standards players, that they kind of like knowing the lyrics also. So there's something to it, you know?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I think sometimes when you're trying to play, you know, having a lyric, you know, even the vocal melody is something to kind of guide you, helps. You know,
Yes,
especially as
yes.
even as a listener, you know,
Yeah,
and that's one of the
yeah.
things with Summer Breeze, I think that I think really made it work so well in your rendition is
Great,
the
great.
melody. You know, it's a good melody, and
Yeah.
it just kind of pulls you in.
Yeah, a lot of people singled that one out for sure.
For the show you're doing at Con Alma, I believe it's like a 3 hour window. Do you typically do two sets, or is that are you playing for a full 3 hours?
I think we generally, if I remember correctly, we do 270-minute sets, I believe. Yes, I think that's how it goes.
And
I
you.
should have it right in front of me what time we start, but then I would really have it together, which I
No,
don't.
that's okay. We can get all that information. We'll share that with
Okay,
folks. As
thank you.
far
That
as,
helps.
you know, being known as is a jazz club, will you be doing some of the bluesier stuff, or should a listener, you know, or maybe is familiar with the catalog, expect more on the jazz end, or can we expect some of the blues stuff to be mixed in, or?
Well, I'll probably, I'll try to, at this point, I started putting out my own recordings kind of a long time ago, and I'll probably try to include something from all my little eras of recording. So we'll certainly do some of this newer stuff, which we're excited to play, but I'll go back and I've written a lot of music, and we even do a couple of things that I've had around for a while that I haven't even recorded yet. Home base to me is more or less being a blues guitar player that's branched off into being a jazz player, and I've played a lot of improvised music, and I've done all sorts of recordings and all sorts of records. And as I was talking before, I've actually, I know what I look like, but I've played a lot of gospel music, actually. I played with Fontella Bass for years and did the Harlem Gospel Singers gig. So I've kind of played a little bit of everything. I'm even on a couple of country records. Not that I'm the greatest Nashville style guitar player. I can do a little bit of that stuff, and I enjoy it.
That's a lot more than most.
Well, I consider myself the greatest country guitar player from the Bronx because I'm the only country guitar player from the Bronx.
And you can only admit that outside of the Bronx.
Yeah, probably. And who knows, there may be somebody from there that's totally skilled country player that I just don't know about, so maybe I shouldn't even make jokes like that,
No, that's okay. Well, Stu, I want to thank you again. The Stu Cutler Group will be at Con Alma here in Pittsburgh on the 14th of May. Shows at 7 o'clock. Confirmed that. So look forward to seeing you. And they've got some great food. It'll be an awesome
It's a
night,
great
man.
place.
Awesome.
Wonderful place.
All right. The new album, Blues from Another Angle, is out now from Stu Cutler. As again, I had said many times in the interview, we will be doing a show on the 14th at Con Alma here in Pittsburgh. That is smack dab downtown. A really cool food menu, really cool music, really cool vibe. So if you haven't partaken in Con Alma, great opportunity to catch Mr. Stu Cutler doing a show there. Again, want to thank Trey from Devil's Cut. Hopefully we'll be getting those guys in to do a show soon. But if you... Didn't get a chance to see them when they were in Erie. Their debut album, Roadkill, is available now. So new music from those guys as well. Want to thank you for listening. If you want information on either one of these artists, you can go to ironcityrocks.com and click on episode 574. We'll have links to the album, to the show at Con Alma with Stu, all the information you need for that. And you can check out the other 573 preceding podcasts if you're new to the show. And if you are new, welcome. It's great to have you. We are on social media, every social media, as Iron City Rocks. No spaces, no dashes, no dots, no official, no real, just Iron City Rocks. So check that out. You can also drop us an email, ironcityrocks@gmail.com. Love comments, criticisms, complaints, suggestions, whatever you've got. Drop it in the inbox. Love to hear from you guys. And until next time, I want to thank you for taking the time out of your day to listen.